This is episode 34 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
What are you waiting for?
I'm sorry.
You and all these people out here. You're so close. It's right there. Just over the bridge. You want it, but you're not doing anything to get it. So what are you waiting for? You want me to tell you?
Yes.
You're waiting for me.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about 1013.
Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Show me where you
fit. Hi everyone, welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I'm absolutely terrified of Meg and Liv Tyler. I never thought that would be possible. Like, I always think of, like, oh, Armageddon, you know, Liv Tyler, or, what was the movie?
The Record Store movie. What was that one?
The one with Tom Hanks there. Oh, crap.
I don't know. I just love, I love her. I love Liv.
I always think of, like, oh, you know, she's just so cute and lovable. And
I picture her speaking Elfin all the time.
Yeah.
That
was your Elfin?
Yes.
Wait, can you do that again?
No, it was very guttural. I don't really know what I just said.
that may or may not be one of the hottest things I've ever seen in my life, by the way. Liv Tyler speaking Elfin.
Oh, I thought you were just saying me doing it. Damn it. Damn it.
I'm not going to lie. That was not one of the hottest things I've ever seen in my life.
Thanks.
Yeah, no. Not at all.
Anyway, so, Liv.
Yeah, she, oh my God. What an amazing job. Really. I mean, truly, you know, there were some people that I've read, I've seen. Obviously, we're recording this episode a little bit late, so I've had a chance to see some of the reaction on Twitter and Facebook and other things. And some people just aren't about Liv Tyler. They don't like her acting. They don't like, they don't like what she does. And I found her to be totally mesmerizing.
Yes.
And she played it very, she needed to be menacing when she needed to be menacing. And she needed to be almost devoid of any emotion. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the whole point of the Guilty Remnant.
Yeah, but it's more important to her. More importantly, it's her, right?
She breaks the Guilty Remnant rule. She's talking so frequently and she's telling people to talk.
Yep.
You know, Meg's making her own rules all of a sudden.
Oh, That Thing You Do. That's what the name of the movie
was.
Oh,
my God, I love that movie.
That's what I was thinking of.
Doing that thing you do. Taking my heart, breaking my heart into a million pieces. Like you always do.
And I'm going back.
You're
just going
to
keep going?
I
guess you really like that song. No, I mean...
And I try so
hard. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I guess I'm going... Are you done? So I guess I'm going from that character to Meg Abbott is definitely a large leap. And it shows what kind of actress she is. And even though you may not... Like, I feel like if you didn't like Liv Tyler, if you weren't into, I'm going far
elves.
Away, you know, like elves and Armageddon and That Thing You Do, then you're probably not going to like this episode, which is fair and fine.
No, but this is a very different character. This is so different than anyone that I know that Liv Tyler has ever done.
Yep.
Liv's always been nice. Liv's always been like, oh, I'm tender and sweet. And
correct.
Look at me with my great hair and beautiful lips. Now, she still has the goddamn great hair and beautiful lips.
We already know this. Hashtag can't ugly up Liv Tyler.
Seriously.
You cannot do it. I don't care how much she smokes or how much white she wears or whatever she does.
White is one of her colors.
Excuse me. I'm Liv Tyler. I don't do white.
Anyway. All right.
You know what? We just sat here and bullshit for the past, few minutes.
Announcements.
All right. Let's get right into the announcements. Well, as we've been talking about in the for the past few episodes, the first thing we want to talk about is the Ultra cast that we'll be doing with the Guilty Remnant podcast and also Jay and Jack of the Leftovers podcast. We'll all be getting together after the finale. I'd probably say about a week or two after the finale airs, and we'll be discussing this beautiful show that we're all watching. And the most important thing, it will be all listener driven. So anything that we talk about will be questions from you guys. So please, I don't expect questions right this very second, but once the finale airs, if you do have things that you would like us, Jay and Jack, and the Guilty Remnant to address, please put it on Facebook or go to Twitter, write emails, send the voicemails, call 503-454-6730. That's our hotline for the voicemails that you hear every episode. And just put the hashtag UltraCast so we know that that's what it's for. And then just let us know what it's for, and we can address it then. I'm really excited for this episode. Our megacast last year was excellent. It was a lot of fun. Everything we talked about, like all of our theories, were pretty much wrong.
Yep, and it's
for
great.
Season two.
It's great to actually go back and to listen to that and hear how wrong you truly were.
I know. I challenge the listeners to go back and find the megacast. I think it was episode maybe 14, perhaps, for our show, and go back and listen to the megacast and hear what it's going to be like. And it'll probably be fairly similar for the UltraCast.
Another quick announcement for those of you who take the time to rate or actually write us a review on iTunes. I might have mentioned this before. If you send in an iTunes review between now and December 31st, send us an email at livingreminders@gmail.com and say, hey, guess what? I reviewed you. My screen name was Pinecone Steve. And here's my mailing address. Blake and I will send you a holiday card. Because you know what? Now's the time to get holiday cards. And this is a great way for us to say thank you. If you already have sent us a rating or review, just email us and say this was my screen name so we know. But we do. We want to just thank you and give back a little bit of something.
Yeah.
And one of the people who reviewed recently was called Tempest Divisa and said, excellent work. Didn't think I could find something that would increase my love for the show. Thanks, Pinecone Steve, for showing me this. That's why I also give a shout out to Pinecone Steve. Whoever you are, Pinecone Steve. You not only reviewed, but you encouraged someone else to review. So we just want to thank you all. And those are...
We got a couple more things, if you don't mind.
Oh my God, Pinecone Steve is in the next announcement.
That's right. Imagine that.
I love you, Pinecone Steve. I don't even know you.
Pinecone Steve, you are the 85th review. And what does that mean? Why is that so important? Because you win a free item from the Mary and Blake store.
Yay.
You met our challenge of last episode, and now you are the 85th review. Just send us an email at livingreminders@gmail.com so we can get in touch, and you can pick any item from the Mary and Blake store.
You get a present.
Yes, you do. The last and final announcement is that there's a guy out there, his name's Noam Bergman, and he's actually a very nice guy. We've been in touch a couple of times, and he will be actually putting on a live piano concert online before the finale on December 6th.
That is freaking amazing.
And the music that he will be playing, obviously, is from The Leftovers, and it will be improvised, and there'll be some themes mashed together. I'm sure there'll be some good happy mistakes, and you know, whatever he wants to play, it could be like Let the Mystery Be, Where
Let
Is My
the
Mind,
be.
The themes that Max Richter, the beautiful themes that Max Richter
will he
created.
Play Miracle?
come on, sing it.
Miracle. I think Noam needs to drop some of those in there.
Oh, yeah, he does. Well, anyway, I just want to let you know that Noam will be having a live concert. I've actually, I watched the last one, and it was fantastic that he did, and so I wanted to promote this. It's going to be really cool. I'll have the link to the YouTube channel that he'll be using on the show notes for this particular episode below where you download it. So just check that out. My love. Now that we're finally into this episode,
I
know.
Hurry up.
What's your Damon rating?
My Damon rating is a 5.
5 Damons?
Yep. I freaking loved it.
You know, you're pretty liberal with these Damon ratings.
You know what? Because I freaking love this show.
Yes, you do.
I love this show. It is the best show that I know of right now, aside from Hallmark Christmas movies, which I really love. I am like a Christmas elf, guys. You can't blame me. I'm all about the 25 Days of Christmas. But aside from, I even like those cheesy claymation Rudolph movies. You know I'm into that shit. Anyway, this show is amazing. The show is so cool. I love that Liv Tyler is creepy. I do. I love how awesome she is. I still have so many questions. This episode was amazing. Many mic drops, like, oh, guess what? Here's Evie. Boom. You know, nailed it. Just so many cool moments. So 5 Damons. How about you?
I'm giving it 4.5 Damons.
Okay.
And it's that is no reflection on the episode itself, because the past 2 or 3 episodes have been absolutely phenomenal. And you know that because I've given out 4.8 and 4.9 Damons.
Yeah.
And I know you hate that, by the way.
Yeah,
but I'm still going to do it regardless. They've been so fantastic and bonkers that coming back to reality almost it's a little bit of a letdown for me. Because it was going so well in the bonkers territory. And I really want to know what happened with Kevin. I'm so thankful that we had the International Assassin episode to finally resolve that whole issue. And that's a distinct shout out and burn of The Walking Dead for what they did to Glenn. For what they did to that particular character. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
But coming back to reality and seeing the Guilty Remnant come back and being with Tommy. I'm just not in love with Tommy. I'm not in love with that character. He's been sidelined for most of the episode, for most of the season. He was sidelined, and his stories haven't made a whole ton of sense to me.
Okay.
And because of that, having so much focus on him, like, I just don't know what he's doing there. I don't know what he's there for. And I don't like that. I'd much rather spend time with more Meg and more Liv Tyler. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But 4.5 Damons for me. And on Facebook, Kimry Woodard Reinhardt says 2.5 Damons. Liv Tyler's acting was beyond incredible, and I agree, and responsible for the 2.5. Too many holes in this episode. Tommy has never been relevant. Wow, I didn't even read this beforehand. I suppose this episode was about the capacity for humans to be fully human. The perfect daughter and fiance transforms into a psychopath. Who knows how Meg became so evil? So, and then Will Steakin on Twitter, he chimes in, says 3.5, a whole 0.5 just for the Lost style Hatch ending. But I found this episode mostly a chore to get through. And Marexa831 on Twitter says, I'm going with 4 Damons. I loved Meg's backstory. I was pleasantly surprised at how much menace Liv Tyler gave her character. And Jake Walden chimes in and says, my wife and I give it a full 815 Damons. Aww. Everyone in our house literally yelled out, whoa, at the end of the episode. I like this. You know what we should do? Jake, that is a fantastic idea. Because we know how we have the 1 through 5 Damon rating.
Yes.
I think for an episode that just transcends the Damon rating, the new number, like the ultimate goal should be 815.
Okay.
I think that's a good one. You want to nail that? Are you co-signing on that?
You know, sure. For those of you who don't know, it's Lost, but just in case any of you didn't know.
That's right. It's Flight 815,
yes.
Lost, Oceanic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is what I want to do. Before we get into the whole episode here, much like how I did the episode with International Assassin, I read an email from one of our listeners, because it gave us perspective on the episode, and it happened again, as a matter of fact, and I wanted to chime in with this particular email from Terry, and she says, I'm giving this episode 5.5 Damons. Yes, I am going there. For as much of the placement of the episode as the incredible layering of the story itself. Did we really think that the GR was going to stay in the background? Well, Blake did predict the GR was coming to Miracle, so props, and for that, I'm going to play this.
Bam! Just like that.
But after 207 and 208, with magical birds, ghosts, spirit guides, purgatory, Dante's Inferno, Patty's resolution, and the resurrection, we, the viewers, were all preoccupied. Surely they jump right to Kevin and what was happening there. But 209 said, welcome back to reality, where some serious shit is going to happen. They sat on that story for 8 episodes and then unleashed such an intricately woven, revealing, and powerful story of what the show is at its core. the human condition and how broken people really still are after the departure. Now, why do I put this here? Because the placement of this episode and how they handled Meg, the guilty remnant, Evie and everything, all at the end, that huge reveal, it was absolutely genius. It was perfect. And I did say that it was a step back because it was going from the bonkers part of the season, but it's an absolute genius part to put this episode and this reveal, because none of us saw it coming. No matter how much we do, no matter how much analysis we do, none of us have seen this. And I just want to give Terry credit for saying this, because it's really inspired. It's an inspired letter that I think she wrote. So that's that.
Well done. Well done. All right, it's time to figure out that title.
Let's play Figure Out That Title. All right, my love. This is your
it's so easy.
Your
it's
gig
great.
Here.
I'm so excited. 10/13 is the title, and 10/13 is the day.
Yep.
That this really is taking place. It's the day before Departure Day. It's the day that Meg's mom passed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to ask me, it's the day that shit got real for Meg.
That's true. That's true. It's actually the day that in the current story time that it's actually showing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when Meg is back in Miracle, it is 10/13.
Miracle.
And I think, and she was in Miracle on 10/13 when she was there with the fiance. Everything that you saw on the episode took place on the day of 10/13.
Which is an unlucky number, says her mom.
You ready to reheat the leftovers?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. It's time to reheat the leftovers.
Okay, so normally we haven't really been going like bit by bit because I've been like starting topics that are major, you know.
I don't mind that, actually.
I mean, right now we can just talk about the elephant in the room, which is Evie.
Well, before we do that, I do want to...
See, that's why I don't think we should.
No. Before we do that, I just want to say this. It was written by Damon Lindelof, obviously.
Okay.
And Monica Beletsky. Now, Monica Beletsky, you probably don't know. She is a writer. I think this is the first episode of The Leftovers that she's done. And if you are a fan of shows like... Ooh, you're going to be happy with this, my love. If you're a fan of Friday Night Lights and Parenthood, you're going to like her because she wrote episodes for both of those shows as well. And she also wrote for Lipstick Jungle 2. So, talented writer. I mean, when you have credits like Friday Night Lights and Parenthood under your belt, and then now The Leftovers, you're going places. And this episode was directed by Keith Gordon. And you know Keith Gordon because he was the one who directed Two Boats and a Helicopter. And actually, you can hear a bunch of great stories about Keith Gordon in our interview that we did with Christopher Eccleston, which I think is episode 16. You can go back and hear about how Christopher Eccleston worked with Keith Gordon and all the amazing coincidences that happened to make them work together on this show. But my love, continue.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't really need to yet go to Evie. I mean, it's huge. It's huge, but it's not the big deal of this episode, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yes, it was the hatch. It was the mic drop. It was ginormous. But this episode was about Meg.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, it was. It was really about Meg. And it was about how Meg, in my opinion, looked perfect on the outside. She looked like she was the perfect little fiance. With the beautiful hair and the makeup, and I know we've said hashtag can't ugly up Liv Tyler, and I totally agree. But on the inside, this woman was really messed up, and not just because her mother passed away the day before the departure, and her guilt and her grieving, as they said in the first season, it was hijacked from her once the departure happened. Nobody gave a shit about her mother once mm-hmm. the departure happened the next day.
Because she was lucky.
You knew where she went. You knew that she died and everything. But Meg was really messed up before this. Because this lady is doing coke. She's blowing lines.
During her, like, brunch dinner brunch outing with her mom.
In order to get through brunch with her or lunch or whatever it is with her mother, she needed to go do some lines just to get through. And one of the things that really told me about this was, you know, the episode starts with her doing her snorting or whatever, and you see her face, and she completes the line, and she looks at herself, and she just goes, smile. And she has to smile. She has to put it on, you know, and it's someone that just does not want to
be. Well, what
be
does
there.
That tell you? Okay, yeah. She doesn't want to be there. What's going on with this girl already? The screws are not on tight.
No, it's not.
Already, before the departure, before her mom's passed.
Correct.
You're supposed to be happy. I mean, anyone who's had to plan a wedding knows shit gets real and it is not a walk in the park most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it can get hard. So maybe Meg was dealing with some stress, some pre-wedding jitters.
Yep.
But really?
Well, you can tell from the conversations that they had where, you know, the mother was saying, Meg, you are relentless. Once you get your mind on something, there's nothing that stops you. And then, I'm going to pay for your wedding. Well, you know, you did owe me for the boots that I bought you a while ago. But, you know, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. It's very passive aggressive in almost a way. And a lot of people were saying, well, the mother was perfect. She was so nice. She was extraordinarily nice about the walnuts. And
no. Mom was mean. That was like her mean thing to say.
Well, no. I mean, the way she handled it with the waiter was fine.
She's relentless.
Well, yes, I agree. And what I'm saying is, yes, again, it seems perfect, but it's not. Because the way that I see it is that the relationship between the mother and Meg was extraordinarily passive-aggressive.
Yes.
It was something that was like, oh my God, those shoes look good on you. You know what I mean? But
it's like when my mom tells me that something's interesting, but she already told me that that's her code word for saying...
That's shitty.
Yes.
That's really dumb, Mary. Why are you doing that?
Mary, what are you doing tonight? Oh, recording an episode for our podcast about The Leftovers? Interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mom, I already know that interesting means that you don't like it. I can't. Mom. Anyway, but exactly. When she said that, most relentless... Like, relentless doesn't always have the best connotation.
I mean, it is. It's good and bad in a lot of ways.
Well, now that we know that Meg's in the GR, though, of course our minds go to Crazy Town. Because if there's no stopping you when it comes to paying for your wedding, you know that there's going to be no stopping Meg to prove her point. I mean, we already saw what she did to Tommy.
Correct. What Meg did to Tommy was... I mean, she didn't just take advantage of him. She did a fucking inception on that kid. And she did it purposely. She had sex with him before she almost lit him on fire. All to say, what she eventually said in the episode was, I wanted to get you pregnant. And the way that I interpreted that was, I wanted to own you. I wanted you to be mine.
That's how you took it?
Yeah, I wanted you... I wanted
because it was confusing. That was confusing to say I wanted to get you pregnant.
Well, I mean...
I wanted you to get pregnant.
You have the literal translation when somebody says, oh, you guys are pregnant. Like when somebody's talking to a couple, they're saying, you guys are pregnant. But really, it's the woman that's pregnant. So you could infer that she's saying, well, I wanted to get you pregnant, meaning she wanted his baby. And you know what? That's a very literal translation, I feel like. And I don't buy it necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
What I buy is when she said to him, tell your mom that Meg says hi. That to me is, F you, I'm here. I want to let your mother know that I'm here. And if you come back around or if she, I want her to know that I'm far more powerful than she ever is. And how can she hurt Lori the most? Again, remember, Meg is about pain. We say that in the beginning clip of this episode. She's about pain, and how can she inflict the most amount of pain on Lori right now? And that is to own Tommy, to make sure that he does her bidding. And whether or not she knew that he would come back around or whatever, because I'm not sure if she did, but she wanted to be in his head just in case.
So Meg's mom... says, oh, I have to tell you something. And Meg needs to go have some more Coke.
That took place with like a 10-minute time frame.
Yeah, God. I have never done Coke.
Neither have
so
I.
So I don't know what the lifespan of it is, but I don't know. Maybe you should just wait a little bit. Anyway, Meg never gets to know what her mom says. Mm-hmm. Comes back. People are doing CPR. And it like really, really messes with Meg. It messes with her so much that, to be honest, I think the breaking point for her, the real breaking point, was when Isaac told her really what her mom said. Because Meg was playing along. Meg was dressed up, mm-hmm. and she was like, but then she really lied to her fiance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what her relationship was like before with her fiance, but she was obsessed about this. She obsessed so much that she's seen other psychics, that she went to Miracle. She had hope. She was so excited. And then what Isaac told her disappointed her so much that she couldn't just tell her husband or fiance.
Whatever it was. Yeah. She had to lie to him saying, nah, he wasn't the real deal.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Is what Isaac said to Meg important? Is it important to know exactly what he said?
No.
Or it's not. Why do you think it's not important?
I don't think it's important. I think, you know, some people may think that it is, or I don't think it's important. I think that's what Isaac was saying to her mm-hmm. when he was like, you're going to be disappointed because it's going to be, I took a really big shit last night, or I'm thinking about planting red roses in my front yard. Like, I took it that Isaac was telling her it's not going to be as big a deal as you invested it to be. Mm-hmm. And if you've already spent this much time and this much money going to see other psychics, and I'm going to tell you that your mom just wants to plant roses, you're going to be really pissed.
Yeah.
Because there's no deep meaning in this.
And here is the favorite theme and the favorite saying of this season's podcast. Meg ascribed meaning to what her mother was going to say. She never knew what she was going to say. And then when she could apparently find out what it was, it probably did disappoint her. She probably thought that she was going to say something so spectacular. And as you're watching the conversation happen, it was almost like a forgetful thought for her mother. It was almost like, oh, yeah, you know, I was going to tell you something. And then Meg has to go do coke. But as time progresses, like, we see Meg enter into Jardin 2 years after this occurrence. So she has 2 years to think about what her mother was going to say. And it probably eats at her. It probably just fucking gnaws right at herself. Mm-hmm. Because not only did she not know it, she wasn't there for when her mother died. She was off doing lines in the bathroom.
That's what it really is.
Yeah, so she's probably like, what is it? I need to know because it's for my own good. And when she finds out it was about how, God knows whatever it was, I'm planting roses in the garden, then that's a major letdown. What's more important is the fact that Meg finds out about Isaac, that he is for real. Because he talks about the walnuts. He talks about how the mother didn't want the walnuts. So she knows that no matter what, this guy is for real.
Yep.
You know? And I love how he had a distinction between the palm print, which is for the future, and the thing that he made her chew, which is for the past.
Yes.
And getting in touch with those who are there. And I love how he said, you know, when people know they're going to die, they come up with this thing that is usually an eloquent speech. But when they don't know they're going to die, the last thing they say to themselves is largely inconsequential. And again, leading to disappointment.
Yes.
And and even Isaac saw it in her face. He says, no matter what I say to you, it's not going to fix what's broken.
It makes me so upset that Isaac didn't do her palm print, because then he would have seen this crazy future. You know?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, let's talk about Meg's whole trip. She got to see Dirty Santa when she and her fiancé came to Miracle.
Great detail, by the way. Dirty Santa was, first of all, not as dirty. And secondly,
his whole campsite was a little less.
I know. And he didn't have the long hair, didn't have the long beard. Mm-hmm. Great detail of filming there.
They also got to listen to some of the audio tour, mm-hmm. and we got to see the woman in the wedding gown.
Yes, how she wore the wedding dress the day of the departure, and she's out there every few hours just to have her 15 minutes of fame now that people are on the tour. And we also found out a small tidbit of information: the crack in the ground was from a gas explosion
fracking. I don't know what fracking is.
I don't know what fracking is either.
I'm going to Google fracking.
I know that it was a swear word. Frack was a swear word in Battlestar Galactica.
Okay, fracking is the process of drilling down into the earth before a high-pressure water mixture is directed at the rock to release gas inside. Water, sand, and chemicals are injected into the rock at high pressure, which allows the gas to flow out of the head of the well.
Why
would you do this? I don't understand the point of fracking.
Well, I mean, the point of the fracking is what it is. But here's the thing. You have these tremors that are caused by fracking. And you're talking about water pressure and sending water down. There was the earthquake when the departure for Evie happened, you know, in quotations. Is that part of the fracking process, number one? And number two, they kept the crack there encased in the plastic to remember that this happened on the departure day. But here's an interesting fact. If you recall on when the Garbys were at their best, that episode of, I think it was 109. Yeah, it was the penultimate episode. Remember when Kevin was jogging and he was staring at the manhole?
When he was jogging?
Yeah.
Let's just sit with that for a moment. Yes.
Just like that. A winner.
Oh, I'm getting a little warm. Okay, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
When he was jogging, yes. Remember he was staring at the manhole cover?
Yes.
And the manhole cover exploded? So is there a connection there? Like, Damon Lindelof is a master at having things mirror and having things rhyme with each other each season. He's having all these callbacks. Like we had the callbacks with Yates. We had the callbacks with the manhole cover and the gas explosions. And then we're having the callbacks to the dogs. They even mentioned dogs in this episode too, to Meg, the Guilty Remnant leadership. We have the callbacks with Verdi. We have all these different callbacks. I mean, the guy is just freaking brilliant, man. Really, it's a detailed and layered and finely scripted show. It's unbelievable. But I really love the connection there, that there was a gas explosion in Mapleton on the day of the departure, and there's a gas explosion on the day of the departure in Jardin. Mm-hmm. And they're saving that, and they're memorializing it on the city. So I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I have in my notes, of course, the spitting, Meg. Oh, I put crazy Meg liar. But the important thing is, okay, crazy Meg liar, mm-hmm, finds out that Isaac was real, finds out her mom was just going to plant flowers or whatever the heck she was going to do. This is when she's sad and Meg cries a lot and she meets Evie.
That's right. And this is when, listen, I'm not going to say I knew that Evie was going to be in the trailer at the end of the episode. I will not say that. But you guys already know that I had called that Evie had faked her disappearance. And I think that was a widely speculated thing. But this is exactly when we should have known that there was a connection, uh-huh, between them. We should have known that something was going to go on with Evie, and it was going to be Meg related. And of course, Meg has to tell Evie that great joke, you know, knock, knock, broken pencil. Never mind, it's pointless. And Evie says that to her dad before she goes away.
Yep.
Again, another callback to the first episode. We should have known that there was something going on between Evie and Meg. And I like how Liv Tyler played it, because you could see the pain in her eyes as she spoke to the fiance. You could see the pain in her eyes when Evie tells her, I'm sorry that you didn't find what you were looking for here. Nobody ever does. And then you can really see the pain in her face as she's looking about Jardin before she gets into the bus and then spits on the ground like, this place fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You are all a bunch of bullshit here. And it's getting into that mode of John Murphy. Miracles don't happen in Miracle. They're selling a lie and people are buying it. And you're all suckers. And that's why I think Meg really had it for Jardin. And that when she had the notion of getting back there and filling these people full of pain that they were hiding from themselves, that was the catalyst to why she was going back to Jarden once she was in the Guilty Remnant.
She and Meg and Evie share baby carrots.
Because you can't cry. It's impossible when you eat baby carrots. Is that true, you think?
I Googled it. It's not true.
You really Googled? Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I did Google it. She and Meg click, of course, you know, because Evie is a teenager and teenagers get sad a lot. And Evie looks very, very sad, though. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's just because, like you were saying, like with John Murphy, like they're just pissed that people think there are miracles going on? Is Evie part of this angst?
I think Evie, by this point, she's upset at her dad because either he had just gotten out of jail.
Okay.
And she's upset at him, and she sees how privileged these people are. I mean, they even say this in the audio tour. They say that Miracle is the national park that surrounds and protects the town from those who would corrupt its exceptional qualities. How full of themselves are they really to say something like that? To say it protects from those who would corrupt its exceptional qualities. That is so narcissistic.
Oh. I guess so.
It's so full of shit.
Yeah. It's so full of shit that Liv spits. Meg spits on the ground.
But here's the thing. Evie sees it. Sees this.
So, of course, now we know that Meg had to go back to Jarden at some point to connect with Evie.
Correct.
Within these couple of years.
All right, now,
how do you find this girl? How do you just, like, wait? And you're like, I'm looking for this girl.
Well, here, aside from all that, do you buy the idea that Meg found Evie or Evie found Meg? And they collaborated with this whole GR thing.
Yes. Especially because Meg got reprimanded for reaching out to other members of the houses. And Meg seems to have people in a lot of different places. Meg now has a GR group who is right outside Jarden. So what's to say that other members of Jarden, not including these three girls. I mean, let's be honest. Teenagers can figure out stuff and can figure out ways to be shady. They figured out how to escape to begin with. But I think that Evie and Meg connected. Maybe Evie found Meg.
Mm-hmm.
And Meg's been in the know with tons of different people. I don't know how long ago this was planned. Part of me feels like two different directions. Either Meg went back to connect with Evie on her own accord, or after Meg came to power after Patty died, that Meg became like this super person. You know, she's connecting with these other leaders. She's just making up her own rules. She's doing crazy shit.
Yep.
And Evie's like, I want to do bad stuff too. I want to connect. And then she finds out it's Meg, and they're like, we are soul sisters.
Yep. Well, I think you are really touching on something here, and I think that you didn't even mean to touch on it, and I'll tell you why. After what happened in Mapleton,
yes,
I am dead up positive that there was a lot of publicity about
that. Oh yeah, it was all over the news.
It's all over the news. It's all over the country. Residents of a quaint, small, sleepy town in upstate New York burned down an entire complex of Guilty Remnant people and killed them
because
of what the Guilty Remnant
did. They put dolls in their houses of their missing loved ones.
BT Dubs, I watched that scene again just to get context. And it's horrifying. It's really awful what these people did. So I can understand how people would lose their goddamn minds about that happening. And do I condone that violence? And do I think that it's the right thing for them to do? No, of course I don't. But I could see why people would freak out. They would snap.
But what you're saying is Evie probably saw this in a newspaper on the
news.
Yes,
and here's the thing. Lori is now out of the GR. Patty is out of the GR because she's dead. Who is left to run that
thing?
Who's
the new mama hen?
Who's the new mama hen? It is Meg freaking Abbott. And Meg is probably out there. She's being publicized as one of the people that were in charge of what was happening. And you could see it in her face when she shows Kevin the sign that says, we made them remember. She had become a zealot at that point.
Mm-hmm.
She unknowingly or knowingly took credit for what happened on Memorial Day in Mapleton.
Yep.
Evie probably saw this, remembered who she was, and said, holy shit, I know her. I hate my town. We need something like this to happen because everyone's full of shit and they need to know that they are suffering from pain,
yep,
just like I am right now too.
So that's what I think. I don't know. You, as you said, you go on to blogs, you read these different ideas after the show.
I hadn't seen this, by the way. I have not seen this.
Had not seen what?
This theory that we're putting out right now that Meg got publicity.
See, this is why I don't read this stuff, because I come out with my own things. I don't even do coke, but I come up with these ideas.
Hey guys, let's do an 8-ball. No. Get some good leftovers theories.
People should put me on Reddit. I don't even know. This is crazy.
You should just have your own page, your own subcategory
Mary's
for
thoughts.
Reddit.
Yeah, but that's what I think. I mean, there's that very, very slim chance that then Meg went back, but this is what happened. Evie sought her out.
Deep thoughts with Mary Larson.
Okay, you want to know what was another deep thought? All right, this is how my extremes go. I've got like really good ones like this, like okay. Evie finding Meg. And then I've got others like, where the F is the bus monitor on the kids' bus? Okay, when I was in school, the sixth graders got to be bus monitors. We had little sashes, and so we were helpful. When the driver gets taken off the bus, all of us bus attendants knew you could open up the back of the bus.
Yeah, well, okay.
So I'm talking about, of course, the big switch.
Yeah.
The big switch when suddenly you're in a different town.
Which, it was a phenomenal transition. Keith Gordon, thank you. Thank you so much for this, because you see Meg get into the bus in Jarden. They start singing the song, Wade Into the Water, which, by the way, is a callback. That's Smoke in the Water.
Oh, what am I singing?
You're singing Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple.
No, but wait, not.
Yes, you were. But you were putting the word. Oh, my
what
God.
Ifs.
Okay. Anyway, they were singing Wade Into the Water, which is a callback to the cave woman. The cave woman, and also the springs that disappeared, mm-hmm, which is really cool. I like that. But you see this, you see Meg get in there, and then they have this really cool transition, a brilliant transition of just looking out the front glass of the bus, mm-hmm, and you're looking at it like, what am I watching here? Because it
showed like a street sign. I didn't know if that street sign was important.
Yeah, it wasn't important. It was like
a throwaway
Woodbury Street, yeah, or something, whatever it was. And it takes a left, and then all of a sudden you see the Guilty Remnant. You're like, whoa, the Guilty Remnant are in Jarden, and then Meg steps out. You're like, nope, we're back in time.
We're back
now. When she threw the grenade in there and she walked out.
I just put, my notes say, exit in the back, you idiots. And
well,
I mean to the
well,
children.
Listen, they're all kids. They're probably young kids.
You learn that. The sixth graders should know.
Well, here's the thing. The grenade's probably in the back of the bus by then. Who the hell wants to go in the back of the bus when the thing is there?
Whatever.
Okay, so whatever. Here we go. They show her walking out. And I'm waiting.
You thought it was going to blow up?
I really did.
Oh.
And this is what Meg is all about. And I'm going to get into this a little bit later. Meg is about a kind of mind fuckery that is rarely seen on this planet.
I'm going to stab you for one moment and play you something.
Okay.
Wade in the water. See, I was right. I was right.
Do I need to play Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple? Do I really need to do it?
Wasn't I just singing this? That was what I was singing. I don't care if they sound alike.
Okay, fine.
I'm just
whatever.
Saying.
It's, you know, we'll probably find out someday that Deep Purple based the Smoke on the Water on that song, which I wouldn't be surprised.
All I'm saying is I was right. Continue.
Yes,
so.
I love you. Anyway, Meg is into some serious mind fuckery with people. What she, speaking of that, by the way, Felicity is joining us briefly, so she'll make an appearance. Meg wants people to feel unsafe. It's not about just being a living reminder anymore. By the way, how many cool callouts for our podcast name were there in this episode?
Oh, I just kept hearing the Mario sound. Ding! I was like, yep, that's the name of our podcast. Oh, that's the name of our podcast too. Living Reminder, boop, that's the name of our podcast.
I have it here. There we go.
We could go back. Like when Matt Jameson especially said it, I was like, yes, we need to get that sound clip.
I know.
We should just string all of the sound clips of Living Reminder. Anyway, yes.
Yes, it was great to hear our podcast name on multiple occasions, by the way. For Meg, it's about making people feel unsafe now. It's about giving people pain. It's about giving people unease. It's not just to remind people anymore. And she says it herself to the Guilty Remnant leadership. She says, why It's what we're doing isn't working anymore. We need to step it the fuck up. It's not just about standing in front of someone's house and staring at them. How can I be a living reminder? Thank you, by the way. How can I be a living reminder if I'm just staring at them when I can just put my cigarette out in their fucking eye?
Ugh. Can we talk about this group, though? Okay, that house was easily worth $3 million.
Oh, yeah. And again, remember, Guilty Remnant has all the money and they have all the real estate because people give up their real estate to the Guilty Remnant when they join.
Oh, because this is one of the questions. I was like, God, I really want to know more about why the Guilty Remnant has so much money. Like, is it just the Guilty Remnant people or are there financial backers who are like secret Guilty Remnant people but who have a lot of money?
Oh, I'm probably certain that they have, you know, benefactors in some sense. I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, they get all their money because you have to give it up.
These, of course, are women that are, you know, top of the Guilty Remnant, wherever they are. And Meg even tells them, this is a conversation, so let's just have one. Like, use your flipping words. Mm-hmm. She did something with the dogs.
That's right. We don't know what it is.
What did Meg do to dogs? I'm not okay with that. And exactly, she says, you know, yeah, we have routines, but we stone each other to death. So, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, your explanations are useless. Like, sorry, that's...
And we don't allow children. You don't, like, the bus, really. And I love what Meg is doing here. Because what Meg has done is she has essentially taken the Guilty Remnant, applied what she likes about it, and then turned it into her own thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Meg doesn't have any more time for writing down things on a piece of paper. She doesn't give a shit about that. She doesn't care about the code of silence. You see that throughout multiple times of this episode. She's talking to the Guilty Remnant leadership. She says, can we just have a fucking conversation? She says she talks to her people in Jardin, where she's like, just fucking tell me what the problem is.
Yeah.
She is creating her own Guilty Remnant.
Oh, yeah. She has her own rules.
It's like the Catholics versus the Protestants. You know, the Catholics were one thing. And then you had
King Henry.
That's the Anglicans.
Oh.
But the Protestants, like Luther.
Okay.
I went to public school.
I don't know this. I don't know this stuff. I should know it, though. I probably studied it.
It's like, it's like taking a Taliban and an ISIS. You know, Taliban's pretty bad. But ISIS, dude, they're fucking bad news. They're really, they make Taliban people be like, oh, bro, calm down. And what Meg is creating is an ISIS.
I mean, she's contacting heads of other houses. What is she doing with them? I have no idea. They ask her, are you planning your own action on October 14th?
And here I love this conversation, too. And I wanted to ask your opinion about how Liv Tyler handled it, but the way that Meg, the character, was responding, because this felt to me like a real female kind of conversation.
Oh my God, I was just gonna say that. I was like, it's got girl written all over it. And, oh yeah. No, yeah. I won't do anything.
No, that's ridiculous.
I loved the ending when she said, you can count on me.
Oh my God.
I feel like I've said that to you when we fought and you'd be like, Meg, you better do this. Oh, you can count on me.
And then the other thing I really like too, and this reminded me of
girl
you too.
Bitchness.
When she was like, oh yes. We've been painting our signs all week.
Yep.
You know, and they're saying you need to be, you know, I don't know where the goddamn town was, but you need to be here. Take your people here and go there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, yes, you can count on me.
Dobbs Ferry.
Yeah. Is that Dobbs Ferry? Is that what it was?
Yeah. And then then they talked about how she's really messed up the Tommy situation in New Rochelle.
Correct.
So this at least made me realize I think they're still in New York because New Rochelle is somewhere I drive through. When, like, I see signs for it when I drive down to New York City.
Sure. Okay. Fine. So.
So they're still in New York.
Okay. Let's just say for the sake of argument, they're in New York. Fine. Great. The fact that, you know, Meg was told to handle the situation by the Guilty Remnant leadership. I mean, it's just showing how much power this woman is getting.
Already at 23 months.
Yeah, she's only been there for 2 years, less than 2 years.
Yep.
You know, and she says, oh, I've been a year in, but she really has been there for about 2 years.
She's pretty frustrated, though. So I'm surprised that these people are letting her do anything, because to be honest, if you're in the guilty remnant, you're kind of a loose cannon sometimes anyway. I mean, mm-hmm. you're going against the norm. You've left other people. You've left other rules. And then here you have Meg, who's doing things really differently. Mm-hmm. And she's obviously got some serious mental issues going on. And they're just letting her do things. I mean, yeah, they'll say, hey, you were buying a lot of plastic explosives.
Yep.
You did something with dogs. You did something with kids. And they're just letting her go.
Yeah. And but the problem with Meg is that I'm not sure if she's a psychopath, but she is at least too concerned with who she is and her own anger.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, again, we've said this, it's not just about standing outside and wearing white anymore. It's about inflicting her anger on other people, making other people feel as sad and angry as unsafe as she is. She has her own issues that she has to deal with, and she's taking it out on everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the guilty remnant itself, I mean, listen, A lot of people got sick of the guilty remnant by the end of last season. And I get it. It's not the most compelling group of all time. But now they're showing conflict in the guilty remnant.
Well, because last time it was just a group of depressed people who would sit around and smoke cigarettes and not talk. So mm-hmm. Patty was awesome. Patty was fun. Patty was invigorating. But everyone else is just really, really sad people. So they're not really doing that much. But now, with crazy Meg at the helm, this is a whole breed, a whole different breed.
Yeah, and Damon Lindelof actually had this fantastic interview with, I think it was Variety, about the last episode, about 10-13. And he actually references the Guilty Remnant. And what the guy that was interviewing him said, listen, I had issues with the Guilty Remnant, but I feel like this season you've done better with the Guilty Remnant. And Damon Lindelof says, listen, you're not wrong. No, actually, you're right. The Guilty Remnant, people don't like them. And hopefully, I feel like we presented the Guilty Remnant in a more compelling way through Meg's perspective, because she's the one who questions them. In fact, she challenges the parts of the Guilty Remnant. I don't want to write on this pad of paper. Stop writing. Let's fucking talk. And that's good, because that's what religion is. I mean, that's why there's a broad array of faiths. Not every Christian is a Catholic. There have to be people inside those religions questioning and challenging and offering new doctrine. Mm-hmm. Right? So even Damon Lindelof was well aware of this. And I think this is probably why we see this change or this evolution of the Guilty Remnant. Because we also have to remember, Tom Perata told us this, the Guilty Remnant is a brand new creation. They've only been around for 4 years, just slightly less than 4 years. They don't even know what they're about. They just know that they smoke, they stand in front of people's houses, they wear white, and they say, we want to be living reminders, right? That's what we want to be. Ultimately, they are still evolving, and Meg is a part of this evolution process for them.
Meg did not take care of Tommy.
No, Meg did not.
Tommy tried to take care of Meg. Do you want a hug?
Wait, what's your name?
I can do this for real.
Yeah. What did you take for that, by the way? Like, what was your take on the whole,
at first I was sad because I was like, oh, Tommy thinks she's really there for a hug. Mm-hmm. Like, Tommy thinks he's going to try to help her.
Yeah, and like, what's your name? Meg, right? Do you want a hug?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He was like, oh, I'm going to try to work my magic on this woman who almost burned me and raped me. Wow. Okay. You're here. Let's pretend not to be awkward.
Yeah.
I can do this for real. She can.
Yeah. So what's your take on that? What do you think she means by I can do this for real?
A lot of people feel that by being violent or acting out helps you get rid of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So she's taking action to help herself feel better. And that's what it is. I can make the sadness go away.
Yeah.
That's what Meg is saying. Yeah, I can do it too. I just do it in a different way.
I can give you a reason. I know you're sad. I know you are messed up. I can take away your pain, and I can do it if you come along, and which is the reason why they go together, you know, as a matter of fact.
Well, they go together after Lori smacks her son.
Oh, what a fantastic
scene. I mean,
scene.
that was the thing that broke it. I mean, Tommy was already sad. Here he is smoking.
Yep.
And that really shook him up, what Meg said.
Sure.
And just seeing Meg and kind of probably having to relive that over again. And then Lori comes in and smacks him.
Well, she talks about the money and we have to give back people's donations. And you know, she was frustrated because she planned this whole thing out and Tommy's still there. And Tommy's like, what are we even talking about here? I mean...
Well, and he called her out. He said, you know, you left your family. Yeah, that's what pushes her over.
He says to her, your book didn't work out, so you figured you'd pimp out your own fucking son so that you wouldn't have to run people over anymore, so that you wouldn't have to feel bad about leaving your whole fucking family. Now, okay, whoa, that is intense shit.
Yeah, it's all true.
But he's not wrong.
Yeah, it's all true.
He's not wrong. Lori is angry. Lori, and obviously now we find out why she thinks that Tommy is with Kevin down in Texas and why Tommy left, because he called her out, she gave him a whack, and we realize that the hugs are fake and she is putting him through this and not giving a shit. She's only concerned about finding a permanent space for them to be in because renting the halls are expensive. And why would you stay here when you know I have 30 people waiting for us and I have to give their money back? And he's like, what? This is when he realizes the same kind of way he realized with Holy Wayne that what Holy Wayne was full of shit, now he was full of shit too.
Yeah.
And he is lost. And this is why I'm not sure I'm in love with Tommy the character, because he's just always constantly lost. He doesn't really have a purpose quite yet.
How many people in this world do you think, though, are completely lost like Tommy? I think Tommy is a huge majority of this world who doesn't belong in the let's move on with our lives and be happy, nor do they belong in the guilty remnant.
Yep.
They're somewhere in this middle area. They're somewhere, what is purgatory? They're in their own purgatory on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for Tommy. And you know what he feels like? He feels like an abandoned dog. Just like the one he sees in that park. How sad was that?
Oh, look at you. Nice transition there. Very good.
Yeah, I try.
Which is why I think when he sees the abandoned dog, he realizes I have nothing in my life.
It's like, that's like me. That is his spirit animal right there.
The abandoned dog is Tommy's spirit animal. And he chooses to go find Meg.
Mm-hmm.
He chooses to say, and I love how he showed up drunk and he talks to the girl at the Guilty Remnant thing that blew the whistle.
Oh, I thought those guys were going to beat him up again.
Oh, my God. And they did. They did kick the shit out of him before Meg got there. But I loved how he went to the girl and said, you are the one who blew the whistle. Blow the whistle that brings Meg. I want to see Meg. Because, again, she got him pregnant. She got him pregnant with the idea.
Yeah.
In his mind. That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
And he couldn't help but be drawn to her. The gravity that surrounds Meg is sucking Tommy in something pretty fierce,
mm-hmm.
You know? And you can't, he can't help but go to Meg and say, guide me. And even towards the end of the episode, when he's walking out of the compound and Meg's walking away and she's walking towards the barn, and she's like, hey, what are you doing? And he says, well, I'm following you. Because he can't do anything else but follow her.
Yep.
And that's what Tommy is about, following people.
You know, I find it really interesting that she did decide to bring him. She must have just felt like it was so kismet that his family is in Miracle.
Yep.
And that's where she's doing all of her shenanigans.
Yes, but I have a sudden theory about this. And
can you drop it now?
No, I'm not going to drop it now. I'm not like you. I hold all my good stuff for the end. So I'm going to leave my...
Well, because he wasn't part of the original plan.
No, he wasn't, and that's key to my sudden theory of the week.
Okay.
By the way, so listen, do you want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about the reveal at the end? Because we're almost there now, right? I mean,
I think everything else. I mean, we have to talk about our talk with Matt Jameson.
Yes. Okay.
We can't. I freaking love Matt. We can't leave Matt out, and he knows she's up to something.
Yes.
Oh, God, he's just so good. I don't think you're being honest.
The way that she delivers that line, it reminded me of the way Daenerys deliver the line Dracarys. It was just so powerful in Game of Thrones. It just, that's one of those moments where you're like, oh God, that's so fucking cool. And when Meg says, "You're waiting for me," it just chills went up my spine. I had goosebumps, and I had goosebumps listening to it at the beginning of this podcast, because, you know, and I give credit to Brian Davids for coming up with this idea that Matt was going to lead the rebellion against the people that are outside of Miracle towards the town of Jardin. So I wanted to play this for him.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
He called the idea that this was going to be a battle between the outer Miracle and inner Miracle. And I think that was a very salient point. But what none of us had the idea was, it was going to be Meg who led these people, who gave them the catalyst. And yeah, listen, we know that something is going to happen on the bridge.
With a camper. What is it called? Streamline? What are those things called?
An airliner or...
Yeah.
Is it... No, in an airline? I forget.
I'm calling it a camper.
Yeah, whatever. The camper. The silver camper, right?
Silver bullet.
The silver bullet camper. Okay, we'll do that. Something is going to happen. And by the way, I love how they use these flashes. All season, they've been doing these flashes, these very quick bits.
Yeah, like if you're a long blinker, you do not know what's going on.
A long blinker?
I think I'm a long blinker. I had to rewind a couple times and be like, did I fake blink something? What was that? Was that something in my eye? But maybe I have like a long blink. I don't know, but I've had to rewind it and press pause.
So we have that quick blink of the camper on the bridge.
If you caught it.
Something is going to happen with that.
On the bridge.
And then we have
the camper.
We have the quick blink of her attacking Matt Jameson back in Mapleton when he called her out. Well, he called her mother out after she died and saying that she was this person and whatever. And he says, "I just wanted to make you feel again." And this is when he realizes, after she says, "All the people in there, they don't have the pain that we do."
That's when the psycho bell went off in Matt's head and he went, oh, shit.
Yeah, the Nora's crazy violin? That's when it went off for Matt Jameson, for Meg. Then he says, "I don't think you're telling me the truth, and I'm sorry to be your living reminder." And it was his way of saying F you back to Lori and calling her out on her bullshit. And that's when she has to take control of the situation. And Matt can't help but be teased or sucked into her gravity too. Because she says, "Do you want me to tell you why you're waiting?" And he looks at her with a genuine curiosity and a genuine idea of, yeah, why? Why am I waiting? And he gravitates toward the idea of, "You're waiting for me." And you have, of course, it's great because you see, again, the world building of Outer Miracle with all the people that Meg is walking through. And by the way, the song that plays when Meg is walking through Miracle is the song Magic by Olivia Newton-John, which, again, is another callback to an earlier episode of Grease when they're singing the "You're the One That I Want."
And Australia.
And Australia, thank you very much. And some of the lyrics to Magic from Xanadu with the song that Olivia Newton-John was singing as Meg was walking
through. Oh my God, do you know about Xanadu?
I do know about Xanadu, and these are some of the lyrics. It says, "You have to believe we are magic. Nothing can stand in our way. You have to believe we are magic. Don't let your aim ever stray. And if all your hopes survive, destiny will arrive. I'll bring all your dreams alive for you." And this is a perfect song for Meg. Whether or not she is going to accomplish what she intends, she actually believes that she is going to accomplish it.
Oh, yeah.
And she will change.
Because she's relentless. She accomplishes everything that she does.
Which again leads into the sign that the lady held up to Tommy.
She's going to change everything.
She is going to change everything. And I don't doubt it. I don't.
Oh yeah,
I
it's
don't,
happening. Something's
it's,
happening.
it's gonna happen. And all right, so let's just. Do you want to tackle what you think is gonna happen, or do you want to get into the reveal?
I mean, the reveal is the reveal.
All right.
Okay, he goes to the barn. We know why people got pissed off that guy saw the barn, so they stoned him. Man, these people sure do love stones.
Oh, that was brutal, by the way. When she's like, yeah, you know
it
what?
Makes you not want to go exploring.
Not near Jordan, Texas, I'll tell you that. You know, that which is the thing. They find the guy. There's a situation that Meg has to encounter at the compound in Texas. It's a guy that was exploring in a bike trail. They find
Poor
him.
Thing.
He may or may not have seen it. And the guy, and one of the GR people says, let's just keep him because after tomorrow, it ain't going to matter anyway.
Yes.
And she said, and again, it's about pain for Meg. It's about stoning him and making a statement to her people. No. We don't mess around here. Stone him. And when Tommy follows her out and says, wait, what are you doing? I'm following you. She says, no, I took you to Texas. You're here. Go away. And he says, well, what am I going to do? She picks up a rock and says, make yourself useful. Oh, man. Oh, Jesus Christ. What? I mean, brutal. Brutal,
it
brutal.
It is.
Brutal. Well, I mean, let's get into some of the reveal. Because
so Tommy gets to the barn.
Well, he gets to the barn and he sees...
Nobody's on guard. What the fuck?
Now, did you believe that it was going to be full of bombs?
No.
Not even because of the C4 or whatever? You didn't think that the... Because remember, we saw the flash. It's on the bridge. We know something's going to happen on the bridge.
Did I think the camper was going to be full of bombs?
Yes.
No, I did not.
Okay. Because I think the C4 is a red herring. I think it's something
Where is their C4? Where are you finding... I didn't even notice C4 in this episode.
Well, no. Do you remember in the conversation with the Guilty Remnant leadership, they said, hey, are you the one getting plastic explosives?
Yeah. I thought they were just fake bombs, like the ones you throw on the bus. I thought they were saying, why do you keep buying fake bombs on Amazon to throw on buses? No. That's what I thought. Plastic explosives. That's what it looked like to me. A plastic grenade. Right? What does that mean? Plastic explosives.
Plastic explosives is a real thing. It's C4. It's like...
Well, a plastic explosive to me is a real thing, too.
Oh.
Called a fake bomb.
Maryism.
I totally took it as their plastic grenade.
Oh, no. Plastic explosives is real explosive. It's technically known as C4.
Well, maybe the GR meant it my way.
Oh, okay? Oh my God.
Then you know what? Poor writing. Don't show a plastic explosive if you're meaning a different plastic explosive.
Oh, my God. You are so funny. I love you so much. Really, I do. So, okay. So you didn't feel like it was that.
I'm not alone. If any of you didn't know what they were talking about and you thought it was the fake bomb, write me an email so I don't feel alone. Anyway, okay. So, yes, I didn't think that it was full of it because I thought they were just pretend grenades. So I did not think that the camper was full of pretend grenades.
Well, okay. So Damon Lindelof was talking about the twist and how... he was coming up with the twist. And he said, I don't want to totally demystify the writing process of the episode, but with that particular reveal, there was a trajectory of ideas that fell into place very, very early on as we designed the season. One of the things that I think that the first season certainly lacked was a backbone of, well, this is the story of the season. It was a little bit more about watching the condition of these people's lives, and I was really interested in exploring that territory, but it lent itself more to a day in the life form of storytelling versus having a spine to kind of build this on. When you watch a season of Justified or Breaking Bad, you basically go, oh, this is a season where Jesse and Walt are working in the super lab, and this is what they need to overcome. There was a real shape to the story. So this is something that they knew very early on in the season. Actually, before the season came out, they had this completely planned out, which is why you can see all of these great callbacks. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not like Lost where... speaking of that, by the way,
we have to go back, Kate.
It's not like Lost where they were kind of, they had an idea, they had a timeline, they had a guide, but they didn't know exactly how they were going to get from point A to point B. Whereas in this show, it's so tightly written, it's so tightly edited and tightly shot that they knew exactly what they were planning out each and every time. So when he talked about the idea of having Evie fake it, he says, we were having all those conversations very, very early on. We decided the girls were really angry about the exceptionalism in Jordan. Remember, we were talking about how they were keeping out all of the undesirables from squandering its exceptional qualities. They sing the miracle anthem, but they sing it snidely and snarkily and with some degree of teenage rebellion.
Yes.
And I want to say that Brian and I called this out.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
So we were like, yeah, they faked it. And obviously, this is a horrible thing to do. It goes well beyond a teenage prank to put your parents through this. Not to mention you'd need a significant degree of resources in order to pull it off. Where do you go in a media-saturated culture? How can you even disappear? How big of a thing would this be? When we started kind of kicking the tires of this concept and the idea came up, what if they staged it for a greater cause? A pseudo-religious cause? Jackie Hoyt, one of the writers and producers, suggested that they join the Guilty Remnant. And as soon as she said it, we were like, of course they did. Of course they brought
it. Oh my God, I want to be in these rooms. I just want to be a fly in these rooms as they create these stories. How cool.
I know, right?
How cool is that?
So did the twist work for you?
Oh my God, 100%. Not only did it work for me, but it makes you want to rewatch the first episode so badly. Okay, here's why. The girls, when they were swimming and they were like flirting with, you know, Dr. What is Goodhart?
Yes.
Okay. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then they're back in the car and they're silent.
Yes.
They're silent and they look sad or cranky. So they're practicing being GR. Maybe they're like, maybe it is a religion. Maybe it's what they believe in or they're practicing it. Whatever it is, they are silent just like GR members. Then we see Meg, you know, with her cricket sound on her phone when she's driving with Tommy.
Yes.
And the cricket from episode one.
Yes.
The cricket that John couldn't find that was driving him bonkers. That means that Evie had a secret phone and had the same ringtone.
No, I'm not going there.
Meg.
I'm not going there.
Oh my God, I am.
I'm not going there.
What do you think the cricket was?
The cricket to me it's a real cricket. It's something that was real, but at the time you're looking at it like, oh, this is just John's conscience. No, this is Evie's conscience. This is Evie's fuck you to John.
It's like Jiminy Cricket?
Yeah, it's like, it's Evie's...
Because Jiminy Cricket was Pinocchio's conscience?
I know, yes.
I didn't know if you knew that.
No, this is Evie's little stab at John, and without even like really doing it, without even really knowing that she was doing it, because again, the cricket's real, and we are ascribing...
I thought that maybe Meg might have the phone.
We're ascribing a certain meaning to the cricket, like it was John's conscience.
Yes.
Fine, whatever. But now that we know that Meg has the cricket ringtone, and that she has this connection with Evie, it was more of an indicator of Evie's betrayal. It was more of an indicator of Evie's plan, and that they were searching for it. They were finding it. They couldn't find it. John is driving himself nuts. It's the divide between John and his family and Miracle. It was all about that the entire time. It was just a representation of that divide. And Damon Lindelof even talks about this too. He talks about earning the twist in The Leftovers in this episode. He says, so if The Leftovers is going to have a twist, if we have any chance at surprising people at all, we really have to hide it, but we have to make it fair. There are things in the premiere, like the girls driving in silence. You see them goofing around and listening to the music and kind of busting the balls of the guy who's gathering the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get in the car and they're driving silently and stone-faced.
Oh my God, Damon and I are like on the same wavelength.
And then there are little moments like when they are singing the miracle song with some sense of cynicism. And the oddness of the knock-knock joke and obviously the gift that Evie gives to her father, which they're going to revisit in the finale.
Good.
I have a sudden theory about this too, by the way. So remind me, I got two sudden theories. We had set it up in the premiere and then just let it go and just hope that nobody figured it out.
Could you imagine? There probably is one person that did figure it out.
Because if one person went on Twitter and said, those girls are driving in the car without speaking, reminded me of something, the whole season of the show goes down. By the time we're revealed at the end of episode 9, there would have been a big collective duh versus hopefully a collective gasp.
Wow.
My hope is that when the door of that Airstream opens up at the end of the episode 9, the audience goes, the writers knew. Of course they knew. It was all there.
I love it. I really, really do. God, it's just so good. It really, as I said, it makes me want to just rewatch episode 1. I still I haven't heard from anybody yet who knows sign language. Mm-hmm. I still don't know if Erica was in on it or not. I really want to know if anyone could understand anything that was said between Evie and Erica in that conversation. That's one thing that I'm interested in. I want to know if Michael really believes that his sister departed. Remember how he was talking about like, sometimes twins have like special secret feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
and the other thing that stood out to me now in hindsight, them running through the woods naked. Of course,
correct.
Last episode, I was like, wow, Kevin woke up naked. They were naked too. That's why they were running naked through the woods. Now when I think about it, they were running naked through the woods because they had dogs. They had search dogs.
Uh-huh.
So by getting their scent, remember when in Twilight, Bella and like everyone had to wear Bella's clothes because they had to run their scent everywhere?
Oh my God.
So these girls have been trained by Meg, and Meg is freaking crazy.
That's right.
And they have like this arsenal of other crazy people who are like, you are going to get followed. Maybe they went out through the same storm pipe that Matt came in.
Uh-huh. That's
okay.
Possible.
So, okay, there's a way in, there's a way out, but their scent could have easily been followed. There's three pubescent girls, probably not pubescent, but like, what is it? Puberty girls? I don't know.
Well, pubescent is the word,
oh, okay.
But I think they're post-pubescent by this point.
Whatever, they're smelly, okay? The dogs can pick up on that scent, so they got to spread it all around.
There's a lot of jokes in there that I'm just going to leave alone. I'm going to let that sit with you,
whatevs.
And I'm not going to say anything.
Whatevs.
Well, listen, Damon...
Anyway, that's all I'm saying is just go back and watch episode one.
Damon talks about this whole idea of crowdsourcing and resourceful fans are about figuring out twists. And he says, we're in a media culture where the audience is so sophisticated and they can crowdsource and Reddit this information. If they get a twist, like, you know, the Edward James Olmos twist in Dexter or what happened recently on The Walking Dead, the audience basically crowdsourced exactly how that twist could have happened within hours of it airing. And by the time it airs a month later, what they did with The Walking Dead, the audience just goes, duh. That's not the storyteller's fault. It's just the sophistication of the audience's ability to figure things out. It's like we're up against this incredible creative algorithm. Now, I disagree with Damon here. That was the writer's fault in The Walking Dead. It was the writer's fault how they approached it. It's the writer's fault how they...
Sorry, Felicity is cooing, so I'm just apologizing for any of you who don't like a baby sound. She is just very vocal.
It was the writer's fault on how they approached the entire... episode arc with that character, and they really messed it up big time. But again, it's about this idea of how and Damon is at fault for this, by the way, with Lost.
We have to go back, Kate.
Specifically for that reason, right there. He trained all of us Lindelofites, to watch every single frame and every single inch of that screen to decipher what the story is going to happen. A lot of people passively watched shows for a long time. But after Lost happened, after The Sopranos happened, after all these things happened, we were now aggressively watching these shows and then trying to decipher what was going to happen before we even knew. There were podcasts about this show, about Lost, about Leftovers, doing exactly what we do right now, trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
It's his fault, it's our fault, but he played it to a perfect freaking T. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But I just wanted to mention those few comments from Damon Lindelof. I felt those were very important. There's one thing I want to tackle here before I think we move on to listener feedback.
We're going to do listener feedback in a totally different episode.
Oh, we are?
We are. I'm calling it right now. I think that...
Are we going to have time to do that?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
I already scheduled a sitter. Here's why, guys.
Oh, good. All right, there we go.
I want you to take this episode and things that you think that we said wrong or theories that we have that you disagree with,
yeah,
or if you want to piggyback, call us out, elaborate. I just think there's so much discussion that needs to happen about this episode that I can't fit it all right now.
All right, so we're going to leave the listener feedback for another time.
Yeah.
Fine, fair enough. This is what I want to tackle. What do you think is going to happen in the finale?
We only have one episode left.
Yeah, so like, and let me dive down even further. What do you think Meg is going to do to open up the remainder of Miracle for the people that are in Outer Miracle and bring them into Inner Miracle? And it obviously has to do with the Airstream. It obviously has to do with the girls. What how is she going to inflict pain on Miracle? Because again, Meg is about mindfuckery. She could have killed Tommy, right? She could have totally killed him.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She just fucked with him bad. Okay. She totally could have threw a grenade in that bus that was live and killed all the kids. But she didn't.
Do you think explosives will be used on the bridge?
No, I don't. I think that's... Because if she blows up the bridge, then you can't get in the Miracle.
I think that the girls are going to die.
But how is the girls dying going to bring
pain to Miracle?
How is it? Because it's just that's just the guilty remnant killing their kids. Okay, well, then the argument then is, well, maybe Meg will convince them to kill themselves. As like a
like
as
a Gladys.
As a Gladys. Well, no, Gladys was killed. Well, Gladys was
Gladys
okay with being
killed.
Yeah,
that's what maybe they're gonna pull a Gladys.
But okay, well, let's just say they do pull a Gladys, right? Again, they could chalk that up to the guilty remnant just brainwashing their kids. That's like, oh, that sucks, and they died, and that really sucks. But they can move on.
Does
from
that. Meg want? Okay, here's the bigger question: does Meg want the people of Miracle to honestly believe that the girls departed, or does Meg want?
No, I think she brought those girls in. She's keeping them in the airstream, and she's gonna break them out at the right moment.
Why? Why does she want to show? Oh, guess what? They were hiding all along. They didn't depart. What hurt has that done to Miracle?
Well, you see, that's the thing. That's the question. What is she going to use the girls for? They're not and I think the girls are going to be a reveal, but they're not. It's not going to be the big reveal because we've already seen them. We've already like it would be a big reveal to the town, but as viewers, we've already seen Evie and the girls.
But how can you hurt Miracle? How can you hurt this place?
That's what I'm saying. Again, it's about hurt.
You need to let in these crazy camper Woodstock people. Mm-hmm. You need to let in. They're now like gremlins. They really are. They're going crazy. They had that guy in the Stockhold thing. You need to let in the crazies.
The guy that screams Brian, you know, or that wants you to scream Brian.
That's how you hurt Miracle. In my opinion, you got to let the crazies in.
Okay, agreed. And that's why I think the C4... the plastic explosive.
Stop it.
is a red herring. I don't think they're going to use it for anything particular. I think that's just something that they're throwing out there at you because maybe she was using the C4 for something, but she's not going to use it again because the show doesn't lie to you.
Maybe the girls will be a distraction and then Meg will lead the crazy Woodstock troops in through the tunnel.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, that's possible, but I don't think... I really don't think that Meg is going to kill the girls.
No.
I don't think that she's going to convince the girls to kill themselves.
Okay.
I don't think that she's going to kill herself. And here's the other thing, too. This is something
Meg's too selfish to kill herself.
Because she cares about herself.
Yeah.
She has that pain, and all she wants to do is inflict it on everybody else.
Yeah, it's all about her.
I agree 100%. Here's the thing. She can't go killing people left and right either. I mean, she can do it when they can't prove anything.
Fuck. What about... okay, Kevin driving the little girl. He was in the white car. And the guy who we think is the Australian guy, he had ropes mm-hmm. on the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Meaning what?
Like hanging.
You think they're going to hang the girls?
I don't know. Why were there ropes on the bridge? Why was he standing there?
Well, again,
this is
in Kevin's dream world, too.
Yeah, but Kevin was also driving the girl's car. I don't know. Like, maybe Kevin's on a totally different level where he, like, has psychic abilities. Because why was this Australian man in his dream?
Okay, all right, but again, what is the girls dying going to do to serve, as a living reminder for the town of Jardin? It's not. They're just going to say, well, the girls killed themselves because the guilty remnant brainwashed them.
Okay.
So that's not a living reminder.
Are you asking me this, or do you actually have a sudden theory? Because I don't know.
Well, I have a sudden theory, but it's going to come when the sudden theory comes.
I just want the sudden theory then.
It's going to get there. So here's the thing. She can't go killing people openly. Because we all know ATFEC, ATFEC, the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, explosives and cults.
The people who got Patty Gladys's body.
And the people who killed all of Wayne's people. And the people who don't give a shit that Patty died and that caught Kevin.
Yeah. They're going to be all over Meg.
They're
going to
be all over Meg.
Yes.
And we know Meg doesn't want to die.
Yes.
We know that she has to operate in order to do what she needs to do.
Correct.
Will they be more forceful with people? Yes, but they won't do it openly in public, like to get themselves arrested. So she can't go getting killed, number one, by ATVEC, and she can't get arrested by ATVEC because she needs to do what she needs to do. So that she's not going to publicly kill people. She won't publicly kill herself, like we said, because she cares about herself too much. So there has to be something other. And I will admit, I'm not smart enough to figure it out.
Okay.
I'm not. So that's the reason why I'm not sure what they're planning on doing. But it has to do with the girls. The girls are there for a reason. They gave us that twist for a reason in this episode. So we know what to expect partially for the finale. And by the way, here's a bit of news for you. I forget where I read, the finale is going to be 75 minutes long.
I think it said it on the trailer for next week.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, it wasn't that big of a... You did not teach us anything we didn't know, Blake. Sorry.
I thought I was dropping some knowledge. Yeah.
No, sorry. I'm pretty sure it said 75-minute finale.
You know what? Whatever.
Anyway, okay.
So, do you...
There's a lot of things that need to be clarified. I want to know, what Meg is going to do with these girls. I mean, now we're back in the real world, but we can't forget that for so much of the season, we were in the crazy, what is real and what is not real.
The supernatural whole thing.
I want to know, does Australia matter at all? Or is that going to be season 3?
Okay. I don't think, with one episode to come, I don't think Australia is going to come into play.
So maybe we'll be in Australia next year. I don't know. I want to know, can we have a little more clarification about the birds and coming back from life? And is Virgil totally dead? What did Michael just do? I mean, we still need to clear up that whole thing. Okay, Kevin's here.
Yes. Are you afraid they're not going to be able to wrap it up?
It's 75 minutes, and I have so much trust in Damon.
I do too.
They can do it. But I'm just saying that there's a lot of real plus magic stuff that's going to be going on, and our minds are going to be whirling, and they better have a season 3 because they have a lot of stuff to still explore.
I would agree.
Oh, you know what my last point is?
What's that?
Nora better come back and be a better girlfriend.
She's TV's most perfect girlfriend. Of course she's going to come back.
She's going to be so pissed when she goes home and Lori's there.
Oh, she's not going to be happy. You know what, though? They're not going to really have time to be angry anymore because the GR's showing up.
Yes. Anyway, let's get to your...
Let's do the Brian David's Thought of the Week.
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Mary and Blake, it's Brian David's from the Film Schlubs podcast. Well, after a season's worth of theorizing, I had the right idea in mind, but the wrong intent behind it. I've been saying all season long that Evie staged her disappearance in order to commit an act of benevolence. Instead, she faked her departure in order to commit an act of terrorism. I thought she'd free Jardin from the tyrannical ways of her father John and help facilitate Kevin and or Matt, along with the encampment folk, in the reclamation of Jardin. That would open up the town for everyone, not just those who were spared. But in a twist of all twists, a twist no one could have seen coming due to the minimal screen time of the New York-based Meg this season, Evie faked her disappearance in order to join the Guilty Remnant after randomly meeting Meg a year prior to when Meg joined the Guilty Remnant. But this isn't your grandmother's Guilty Remnant that Evie has joined. This is the ISIS chapter of the Guilty Remnant, a radical offshoot formed by Meg. So instead of carrying out this plan for a benevolent outcome, Evie is assisting Meg in something that is nothing short of evil. In the first act of the episode, the existing GR leadership accused Meg of buying plastic explosives, which she denied, and now we know why. It seems that Meg is planning to either blow up Miracle's gates as well as the bridge to Jardin, allowing free access for everyone, including the encampment folk, or the more likely plan, where she uses Evie's access to Jardin so she can plant the Airstream trailer within the town itself and kill Jardin residents and or themselves to prove that Jardin is not spared from the sudden departure. The world ended according to the Guilty Remnant, therefore Jardin is not an exception per the GR's mantra. So, Evie wanted to end John's tyranny, but not in the way I expected. I thought she was doing all this in order to open up the gates and share Jardin's gifts to anyone who found comfort in them. Instead, she wants to blow up the town. She resents the town just like her father does, except he protects it from people like the GR. We should have caught the signs of this given the silent car ride home from the lake, which proves that the Dr. Goodhart flirtation was all an act. Poor Brian. The smirks on the girls' faces during choir practice make a lot more sense now, even though we use that as evidence to why she staged her disappearance in the first place. Even the nihilistic, it's pointless joke that Evie told John shows us how she felt about the world. Of course, she learned this joke from Meg during their fateful encounter in Jarden about a year and a half prior. I love how Evie received the Jill Garvey makeover from episode 109, The Garveys at Their Best. Plus, Evie's friend's car was white. They left their possessions behind in the white Mercedes, which was not only meant to sell the notion that they had departed, but it also signified that they were transitioning to the GR, as you're expected to leave all of your material possessions behind since life is pointless. Regarding the naked running, I think it was a rehearsal for their fake departure so they knew how much time they needed to pull it off later that night. Blake and I both suggested this back in episode 1, mainly because John watched the Marklin Baker fake departure story on TV that same night. Ultimately, I hope we learn Evie's true motivation, which likely stems from her father. Was she also abused like John was? Part of me thinks that Erica was the abuser here, since it might be too obvious that John is to blame for this. However, we do have a few aces in the hole. Tom, obviously, as he knows what's about to go down. Can he break free to issue a warning in time? Matt also talked with Meg, and he can sense that she's utterly insane. He'll likely give warning. Will his encampment followers help him save the day as they take on the GR? Isaac should be able to play a part in this as well, since he's seen the future as far as John is concerned. I also think we're going to see Isaac read Kevin's palm print, something that's been teased all year. This reading would absolve Kevin from having anything to do with Evie's disappearance, but it also gives Isaac a chance to tell John what is coming in terms of the GR's plan. Let's not forget about Michael. Can Michael get through to his sister before it's too late? Will their twin connection make a difference? Also, my dark horse ace in the hole is the Pillar Man. He's been hanging out in front of us all season. He has to factor into the ending somehow. In closing, I have no idea what's going to happen at this point, but when I spoke to Leftovers writer Patrick Somerville before the season, he made a point to say how the writer's room really focused on a satisfying ending from the start of the writing process. So whatever they have in store, I'm sure it's going to be a fitting end to this unbelievable season of television. As always, thank you to Mary and Blake, and to you, the audience, for listening. You can find more of me, Brian Davids, on the Film Schlubs podcast, as well as Twitter at BDF331. I look forward to Mary waking up next week and Matt's conversation with John, right before John dies, of course.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. I love everything you have to say every week, and make sure you find him on the Film Schlubs podcast. You can follow him at Film Schlubs on Twitter, or Brian himself, BDF331, on Twitter. And you can check out all the things they have that are awesome over there. My love, are you ready for the tweet of the week?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it. This week's tweet of the week actually goes to Terry Pitnick.
Terry!
I love you, Terry. You're one of our favorite listeners.
Yes.
And she says, I'd let Damon Lindelof run HBO after this masterpiece.
I'd let Lindelof run everything.
So, listen, I may be somewhat of a Lindelof sycophant, but I just wanted to say that that was actually a very salient thing. Because what he has created, granted, was this episode a slight step back? Yes, but in comparison to the masterpieces that he's created...
It wasn't a setback. It's a setup for the finale.
Yes.
Like, it was, and it was brilliant. It wasn't even a boring setup for the finale.
No, it wasn't. It was not boring. But I am desperate to see how good the finale is so I can call this the greatest season of television that's existed.
Oh, ooh. Nice.
It's going to happen. If the season finale is at least a B+, this will be the best finale, the best season of television that's existed.
We should make Damon a little award if we do.
He already has a Damon rating system.
All right.
So Terry Pitnick, I just want to say congratulations. Yay. For being this week's tweet of the week. As you know, as we learned all from all season, You will get a gift from the Tag Your It Etsy shop for being the 20th tweet of the week. Just go to www.tagyourit.biz to redeem your $20 gift card that Dawn, the owner, who is amazing, will supply you. She will take care of any need, whether it's something that's leftovers related or Outlander related, or even, you know,
personalized.
Something personalized, anything you could think of that your beautiful mind can think of, Dawn can do it for you. All right. Dallin, are you ready for the sudden theory of the week?
Bring it on.
All right, what do you got? You got anything?
Next week will be the finale.
Great. Great job.
I'm totally going to get the winner.
Yeah, totally. You know, we've been pretty right with our sudden theories of the week, by the way, for a lot of this season. And I will say, I actually have no idea what's going to happen.
Okay.
Like I've already said, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I do have a couple of theories. Number one.
Wait, doesn't that not make sense? I have no idea what's going to happen, but I have a couple of theories. Aren't theories ideas?
Yeah, well, I mean, these are way far out there ideas, and I have no faith in them whatsoever. But my idea, one of them is, I think I know why Tommy is in Texas. It's because they're going to use him.
He's family.
Well, yeah, he's family. He can get into
get a bracelet.
Into GR. I mean, sorry, he can get into Jardin.
Yeah.
As can Evie, by the way. Evie can get into Jardin. They have to let her in.
Well,
she is a resident.
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever happens, she is a resident.
Yeah.
So that, maybe that's one of the reasons why they're keeping her, and they're going to allow her to get in, right? But they're going to use Tommy as a patsy, almost like as someone who's going to take the fall for what's going to happen. They're going to say that he planned the whole deal.
Aww.
And he is going to take the fall for it, and that's the reason why he's in Texas, because they need him. And that's why she was laughing when he tells her, if I wanted to talk about my family, I would just go to Jardin. And remember, she had this like sinister laugh. Mm-hmm. When she's like, oh my God, I can't believe that you're there and that your family is there. That's right. When she realized, I can use this kid for whatever I need now in Texas. And I think that's what they're going to do. They're gonna pin the whole thing on him, like Arlington Road style. Remember that movie Arlington Road with Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins?
No.
Okay. Well, if you haven't watched it, Arlington Road is one of the greatest underrated movies I've ever seen in my life. Arlington Road is about, well, whatever. Go watch it. I think it's on Netflix. They're gonna pin it on him, and I think that's what's gonna happen. And
well, what is this? It you don't know, but whatever it is,
the problem is gonna be, they're gonna pin it on him. And whatever Meg's gonna do, they're gonna pin it on him. Because Tommy is such a listless character, he's been sidelined this entire season. He was pretty much sidelined the entire last season. Everything he does is just kind of there. Remember last season, like every time it went to Tommy and Christine, it just sucked the life out of the show.
Yes.
Remember how that, like, it would just take all the momentum out? And that's the reason why they have to have him do something. Either he's going to save the day, or it's going to get pinned on him.
Mm-hmm.
He has to have an integral part in what's going to happen to legitimize his character being included in this season. Because to just have his character arc be giving fake hugs and getting in a fight with Lori and being like the catalyst to Lori getting to Texas too, that isn't enough for me, for that character. We've invested time in him, and I that's not a good, yeah, that's not a useful character to me. And that's why I think they need to have him, you know, take the fall or save the day. So I think that's going to be my sudden theory of the week.
Okay, just that Tommy's going to be involved and be the person who it's blamed on.
Yeah, blamed on, or he's going to save everything. Because now he knows somewhat of the plan. Is he going to get out of there? Is he going to get out of the compound and go to Jardin and be like, hey, something bad's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Because he knows something's going to happen the next day. They've already mentioned it. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that's the reason for him being in this season. And that's ultimately why I think his character is finally going to be useful.
Okay.
Anything else, my love?
That is it.
All right.
Please hang up and try again.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts before the finale.
I loved this episode. I cannot wait for this finale. I'm very sad that the season is so short.
I know. I wish we had at least a 13 episode, a 13 episode arc. You know, but 10 episodes. I can't believe it's already almost over.
Me neither. It's been a wild ride, though.
I will say that the how they have created this show, it's been masterful. They've brought the ensemble cast. I really feel like they've learned from the previous season about making sure that everybody has their own particular episode, and how they played it with Meg and how they had her sidelined for most of the season. Even though I love Liv Tyler and I wanted her to be more involved, bringing the Guilty Remnant back to making them be the real antagonist.
Yeah,
I think it's a brilliant move.
It is,
and they've taken their time to establish all of these things. And again, you know, I thought about this. Patty leaving when she did with Kevin, I think they did that on purpose because they needed Meg to be the character that you hate now. Mm-hmm. They needed Meg to be the one that's like you point all your visceral hatred towards. And it's no coincidence, I feel like, that Patty left when she did, Meg stepped in when she did. And it's a perfect season. I can't get over it.
I do love it.
All right, my love, are you ready to close out the show?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
As I said, we are going to have a extra listener feedback episode later this week, so please reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Our handles are all the same. It's Living Reminders. Let us know your thoughts about this episode, guys.
And if you want to tell us how badly we sucked, or how great we were, or how much we missed, or whatever, and in the social media isn't enough for you, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to our website, livingreminders.com, so you can see all previous episodes, especially if you're like a new listener.
Yes.
As I said, go back, watch episode one. Let's see what we talked about in there.
I know. And while you're on the website, you can go to the support button on the top right-hand corner of the page, and there's a bunch of ways you can support the Living Reminders, one of which is Patreon. You can donate $1 or two or 125 of those billion dollars each month. We'd be glad to accept it, or you can do a one-time payment on PayPal to donate to help keep this a free podcast. And while that's important, while it does cost money to create this podcast, the most important thing you can do for us, for this free podcast, is tell a friend that we exist. Tell a friend that we are a good companion to this show if we provide enough value for you in The Leftovers. And tell a friend that the show The Leftovers exists too, so that it can get the promotion that it deserves.
Another thing that you can do for us, don't forget, head on over to iTunes. Leave us a review. It'll make us so happy.
Yes, it will.
We now actually have 88 ratings, believe it or not. So some of you have been able to chime on in. Even after Pinecone Steve. Pinecone Steve's review actually said, my go-to listen after each week's podcast. He said they dive deep into the little things that make me go back and watch each week's episode again. There are a lot of deep family themes in The Leftovers, and who better to talk to about these themes but the husband and wife, Mary and Blake, and guest appearances from their child. Keep up the great works. I'm glad that you don't mind our little Felicity's banter. So once again, if you leave us a review, we're going to send you a holiday card.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's do another giveaway.
Oh my God, yes!
Let's do another one for 100. The 100th review gets a giveaway from the Mary and Blake store.
Perfect.
Anything you want. The last thing you need to do is just go check out the Living Reminders blog, where we have all these great writers written by the fans for the fans, all the cool articles that are over there. Just go there. It's on thelivingreminders.com. Just click on the little tab that says blog, and you'll be able to get to it. And that's it. Just go read it, will you?
Thanks, guys. Until next time, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.